We're talking with Dr. Bill Meese, of course, from Texas A&M University. And Dr. Meese, you have the task to look forward as far as this beef cattle industry is concerned to 2025, 10, 11 years out now, and try to, you know, envision what it might look like. And you kind of went through it sector by sector. You started with the beef cow end of the business, and you said we're going to have beef cow expansion, but maybe not as much as some people are thinking.
I think that's true. I think that when we look at the economic factors will tell you that we're going to have a very large expansion. But when you look at the logistical factors, the amount of land, the amount of opportunity that we have to graze on public lands in the West, EPA regulations on grazing lands in the East, the age of ranchers, the amount of capital that it takes in order to increase, all of those things will limit, I think. We will have expansion, but it'll be a limited expansion. And I think that as we get droughts and we don't have droughts and markets go up and markets go down, I think by 2025, we're probably going to look at about the same number of cows we got right now.
One factor that you mentioned might be a drag on the expansion of our beef cow herd that I've not really ever heard anybody voice before, acknowledging the fact that regulations do have their harm, EPA in this case in the eastern part of the U.S.
Especially on the EPA side, on the eastern side, where we've got a lot of concern about point source pollution and those kinds of things. If you look at the ranchers in Florida and what they're going through with the EPA on being able to control and justify and record the pollution that comes off of those ranches, the movement of water into watersheds, and what that's done to limit the number of cows that they're operating on. The dairies have all that same problem down there. The eastern seaboard toward the Chesapeake, all of that area up there, very high concern with pork, chicken waste, and cattle, and dairies. And so as we look at people wanting to expand, they've got to expand with the knowledge that there's somebody who wants to write a regulation to limit that expansion. The next thing is that the price of land east of the Mississippi River has risen, as everyone knows, dramatically over the last few years. And to justify putting cows on $10,000 an acre land is going to be a very, very tough sell. And I don't see people who are raising corn today turning it back to pasture to run cows. Even though there's good economic signals for the cows, they're going to leave that in cropland and continue to operate on it. And west of the Mississippi, as we run on government lands in the far mountain west, they're decreasing the animal unit numbers that we can put out there, not increasing them. And so I don't see those cow herds expanding dramatically either. So I think we're in kind of if we do real good, we'll hold our own kind of a situation.
Of course, we have seen a pretty dramatic increase of productivity as far as the number of pounds of beef per beef cow in recent years.
We have. As we've moved the slaughter weight of animals from 1,050 pounds 30, 40 years ago to 1,400 pounds today and up, we've made up for the loss of cow numbers by the increased weight of the animal we've produced. But there are limits, and we discussed some of those in here today in terms of what we have to provide to restaurants and so on. For the high-dollar restaurants, they don't want bigger cuts. They want smaller cuts to satisfy what their consumers are looking for. The retailers are seeing the same thing. And so can we take these cattle even heavier to compensate for a cow herd loss? I don't think so. I think we've just about maxed out where we are. And we're going to have to get very innovative in how we fabricate beef in order to satisfy what the customers are asking us for.
Feedlot into the business. You have a lot of expertise in that area, and you said there's some significant pain out there to come in as far as scaling back to meet the number of animals we now have.
That's correct. We built the feed yard industry in the late 60s, early 70s. We had 130 million cows. Today we have 97. And we've still got all those pens. And we don't have the calves to fill about 25% of those pens. And we need to run those feed yards full if you're going to make a profit with them, or at least more than 50% full anyway. And so today there is intense competition to buy calves to keep your occupancy rates up, which drives your risk up because you've paid too much for the calves, and then you got $7 corn handed to you, and we're trying to feed cattle and put them into the marketplace. And so the feed yards have been hit with a double whammy of low occupancy, high feeder cattle prices, and high corn prices all at once in the last several years. The people who successfully used risk management lived through it. Some didn't. My thesis today was we need to bulldoze down some empty feed yards so that they never see the light of day again, and get the size of the industry more in line with the size of the cow industry.
And you said the packers really have done a better job, and they're closer.
Yes, they have. They've closed two of their big plants. They've not rebuilt one that fell victim to fire a few years ago. There may be one more. We don't know. But right now, they're only about 7 or 8% overbuilt for the number of animals that we have. And they may need that much in order to take increased numbers in one month and decreased numbers in another month in order to be able to handle the flow of cattle. But they've been realistic and bit the bullet, and, boy, they didn't want to. You don't want to shut a plant down and put 3,000 people out of work. What it does to that town, what it does to everything around it, is all weighs heavily on their decision. But they knew that the cows weren't coming back, and they needed to do that. And in the feedlot business, we're going to have to make that same tough decision.
The one thing about the Packers I thought you said that was really interesting, how they're having to try to mix and match their supplies with branded beef, all the many different branded beef programs that we have.
Years ago, when the only brand on beef was that it was red when it got to the counter, made it very simple. As it flowed through, we graded it choice or select, and we put it in its appropriate spot in the counter. Today, we've got 52 different brands that have some characteristic. Either they are some percentage of Angus, or they are some percentage of something else, or they've been raised in a certain way, or they're natural, or whatever else it might be. And these brands have been very successful. They have merchandised beef to a great advantage, and they will continue to do so. But the problem that puts on a packer to source the cattle, to make sure he's got them coming to him, and then once he gets them, to be sure that he can identify them in a box beef cooler that's 3 blocks long and 2 blocks high, full of boxes, and get it out to the appropriate people, is a huge challenge. And it's not going to get any better. And as more people come up with more ways to brand, the packers are going to have to respond to that.
Finally, as you talked about some of the things that are going to be happening out there ahead of us in regards to the industry, you talked about the fact that we've got some folks that just don't like the way we produce beef in a modern fashion, and that they're not going away.
That's correct. We have people who honestly and sincerely believe that any kind of technology, and new technology, is not good, that we need to go back to the old ways. And when I've had person-on-person discussions with those, I've tried to remind them that if we go back to the days that you're talking about, the life expectancy was 58 years of age. And we've introduced a lot of new technology since then, and we're living to 82 or 83 years of age. And so technology hasn't been very detrimental to us at all. And we are, we're making inroads on cancer, and we're doing lots of things. But they honestly believe that a lot of this technology is uncalled for, and they don't want to see it used on their product. And many of them are willing to pay a premium price to buy a product that hasn't used this technology. And if they want to do that, that's fine. I have no quarrel with that. And there will be people who will try to produce that product and try to make money supplying it to them. And that's fine. But for the mainstream American people, we've got to do a better job of convincing them that what we're doing is not evil, that what we are doing is in their best interest. This whole thing with beta agonists and beta agonists were developed to do what the consumer wanted, which was take fat out of their plate and put lean in its place. That's what beta agonists do. So the beta agonists were the holy grail to win the war on fat. And now it's, we shouldn't be using beta agonists. Well, the price you pay is we make fatter cattle.
Right.
And so where do you want to go? Where do you want the scales to balance is a question that's got to be dealt with. And we've got to communicate that trade-off to people so that they understand that there's a consequence to just saying, don't use that. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what's going to happen if we don't.
One last question. You had kind of a wish list of three things you'd like to see actually happen for the industry.
First of all, and probably the most important one was, I would like to see the beef checkoff retooled. It needs to be done over, probably in a different format, in a different way than we did it before. We did it under the realities of 1986. We did what we had to do. It performed for us. It did what we hoped it would do. But its time has come and gone, and we need to retool that whole operation so that we can put the kind of dollars into this business that it deserves, that it needs to remain competitive. And I don't minimize how tough that's going to be politically to get that done, but it's certainly something we need to put best effort into. The second thing is individual animal identification. If people could understand how much that could improve their productivity on a ranch, they would be using it in a minute. But I don't think we've done a good job, either in the universities, the extension service, or in the checkoff, of educating our cow-calf producers as to that value. We've talked about foreign animal diseases, not about productivity. And I think that's something we need to change.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Appreciate your time.